Right, Maria Lopiano here, and today my guest is Nicholas Pinnock. Thank you so much for joining me this Wednesday morning, Nicholas.
Absolute pleasure.
Now, Nicholas has been on stage and TV for some time now. You're an actor with a very varied CV. People would recognise your name and face from the likes of Channel 4's hit four-part series Top Boy, where you played Leon, or as the very suave and handsome Jason Backlund in Marcella. You crossed over the pond and you are the protagonist of an ABC legal drama series called For Life. Tell us a bit about that. What's that all about?
So For Life is loosely inspired by the true life events of an amazing gentleman called Isaac Wright Jr., who was falsely incarcerated on the kingpin charge for dealing drugs in the state of New Jersey and given life. While inside, he became paralegal and prison rep, and managed to get 20 of his fellow inmates off for their cases. Wow. And exonerated. Then managed to create new case law in one of his cases that he added to his own kingpin case, got himself off and exonerated from one charge, but then he still had 73 years of his sentence on another charge that they pinned on him. He then managed to get himself to trial a second time and got himself off that, became exonerated, and then 7 or 9 years after leaving, no, he spent 7 years in jail. 9 years after leaving prison, he was able to take his bar, and wow. He passed, and he is now a lawyer working in the state of New Jersey. And
isn't
he
that
did
incredible?
What? Oh yeah, he was not one in a million. He was one, because nobody has done that previously.
Yeah.
He's amazing. So the story is you know, inspired by his life and time in jail.
And the thing is, it's not just, you know, it's incredible he got himself off and he was sort of studying, obviously, in prison. But the fact that 20 of his inmates were, well, I guess, innocent and inside. And that's
yeah.
just one prison. So it's a bit like, well, around the country, how many innocent people are locked up?
Yeah, you know? So that was 20 of his fellow inmates. And show highlights the injustice and racial bias of the
system.
Of the legal system. Well, although Isaac will tell you that the judicial system in America is probably the best in the world, but it's the people that have corrupted it,
right,
and made
yeah.
it so that minorities and the poor are therefore overcharged on charges that white people would normally get and given longer sentences. And then they're offered
wow.
plea deals. And they know that they can't, you know, if you're given a 20-year prison sentence,
yeah.
and your plea deal with the opposing counsel is 12 years, you're probably going to, instead of going,
yeah.
instead of fighting your innocence and staying for 20 years, you're going to go, okay, I'll do 12, even though you're innocent.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
yeah,
you
yeah.
don't have enough money to get a lawyer to fight the case to get you off knowing that you're innocent.
Yeah.
And he says that happens all the time, but it's big business in America.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, exponentially done to people of minority backgrounds more often than not black people.
Yeah, yeah. Well, because
which is very
like
timely
said,
in the
absolutely.
Wake of everything that's going on at the moment.
The reviews are incredible. You must be incredibly proud. I mean, not least that you're a British actor playing an American in America, which only adds to the pressure of doing the role justice. I mean, what was that like? Like the first day on set, were you terrified?
I'm nervous every single time I get on set and every single time I get on stage. But it was, yeah, no, it is incredible. I was, you know, luckily for the first episode, the pilot episode was directed by a wonderful director called George Tillman, who directed a really, really beautiful, socially conscious movie called The Hate U Give.
Right.
And he and I and the showrunner, Hank Steinberg, we spent a lot of time cultivating what we wanted Aaron to be, like who we wanted to be. So I took some ideas about, you know, what I wanted my voice to sound like
right.
and my physicality and you know, how these things would work and why I thought they would work. And you know, we shaped them and refined them and made them something that we wanted to see in our lead actor.
Yeah. Well,
our lead character, sorry.
I mean, like you say, it's based around Isaac, right? But you weren't playing him. I mean, you were not an imitation of Isaac. You developed the character Aaron, you know, yourselves.
Yeah, I mean, because it would have been easy to have done a like for like and, yeah, and be Isaac, but because of something called life rights, which they would need to have done for every single person that he came into contact with to allow their story to be told as well, it would have been very timely and very costly, which is
how
why it's not based on,
yeah,
which is why it's not based on this life of Isaac Wright, but inspired by the life of Isaac Wright. So one story of his, we were able to tease out and probably make two episodes out of.
Yeah.
But the core of it is this core story, and the thread of it is still the same: a man who is wrongly imprisoned,
yeah, sure,
because of racial bias, and
educates
he fights to
and,
get himself out. Yeah,
amazing.
So, but I was nervous first day. Yeah, very, very nervous, it was a big task. It was my biggest role to date, and I think
actually,
you know,
the minute you put foot on set, did you have Aaron's accent? Like, for instance, I've known you for a long time, and I remember very early on you telling me that you would call up people like takeouts or friends, hotel bookings, and speak in an American accent, which was hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
Just to see, just so you could keep practice this American accent.
I did. It was something I would do back, and I remember back in the early 2000s and the late 90s, I would find an area code. Plus 001 area code, and then just randomly dial numbers. And I would, you know, whoever picked up the phone, I would just start talking in an American accent and pretending to look for, you know, is Bobby there, please? You know, and I just ask for Bobby, and they go, we don't know who Bobby is.
So good.
Hey, Donald, have you heard of a Bobby? There's a man on the phone asking for Bobby. No, I'm sorry. When did he live here? Maybe he lived here before we did. And you know, we'd have this whole conversation.
That is brilliant.
And sometimes I would go, I'd break out of accent and I'd go, listen, I'm really sorry. I'm sorry to have wasted your time, but I don't know who Bobby is either, but I'm an actor from the UK and I'm trying to perfect my American accent. And
that's
I just
so
wanted
good.
To see if I could get away with it. And they'd go, oh, you're an actor? Oh, how wonderful. Donald, we got an actor on the phone from England. He was just practicing.
Stop it.
You know, we'd have these old people were the best. The elderly were the best because they would just like to talk.
Yeah, I bet.
And
they're like, "Who's this?"
Yeah, and it was great. It was really. And I call up friends who I knew out there and pretend not to be me, and then say, "No, sorry, no, it's Nicholas. It's Nicholas."
And so, going back, so on set, did you only speak in Aaron's accent, or did you flip? And they were like, "Whoa, what's going on?"
No, so whenever I'm playing in a different accent, what I do is I actually start I start the prep beforehand. So a week or two before, I was in New York, and I would walk around with an American accent, pretending I was American, you know, just walking around like you know, like an American, and I would get the accent before I get on set, because the trick is if I just learned my lines in the American accent, whenever they would change the script in my head, I'd go, well, that would be quite difficult, because I would then have to try and, you know, perfect that one or two words that they've moved, or you know, it wouldn't give me space to paraphrase or ad lib if I wanted to, and I wanted to be as authentic as possible. So I hung out in Manhattan and in Brooklyn and, you know, up near the Bronx, and just listen to people and try to copy them.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've played American before, but whenever I play American, I will stay in accent the whole time until the very last day of the job. I will break accent.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of the crew at the end of the gig that didn't know that I was British.
Hilarious. And then at the end of it all.
Yeah. I was freaking them out. And some of them would say to me, halfway through, I saw you in an interview and you're British, are you? And I go, yeah. And they said, can we hear it? And I'm like, no. I said, but keep it quiet though, because I don't want everyone to know. They're like, oh, okay. So they were in on my secrets. They
Oh,
loved it. They
funny.
absolutely loved it.
I mean, I've watched some interviews with you and Curtis 50 Cent Jackson, who is a producer of the show and plays a part in the show. And there is a lot of love there. He clearly thinks the world of you, and it's really sweet to watch. Did you guys know each other before this series?
No, we didn't. I obviously knew who he was, and
Yeah.
he had a vague idea who I was because he was, the exec producer and the one that had to sign off employing me. So he had watched Top Boy, which is
Right.
a bit of a hit in America, and a few other things. So no, he knew. So he knew about me from Top Boy, and a few other things. And we kind of, we had an idea of who each other was. I mean, I knew who he was. He's famous on five continents,
Yeah, oh,
and
absolutely.
he had a vague idea of who I was. But we, it's funny. People ask me this before. What was he like? And did you know each other? And I said, actually, I don't know what 50 Cent is like. I know what Curtis Jackson is like
Yeah.
because I didn't meet 50 Cent. 50 Cent is his rapping persona.
Yeah.
50 Cent is his alter ego. He's the internationally, world renowned,
Yeah,
famous, record
exactly.
breaking, one of the best selling rap artists in the whole world. But when he comes on set, he's Curtis because when he comes on set to act, he's Curtis Jackson,
Yeah.
and he is, acting's not his day job. Music is his day job, producing is his day job, and he comes and he's there and he's humble and he's willing and he's eager to learn and we run lines together and I mean
Yeah, and you see that
it's
in his
hard not to
interviews
because
and in
he's
the sort of in the role, you can kind of see his vulnerability, and
yeah
he seems like a lovely man.
oh he really is. And I think and I've said it and I will continue saying it, this is the best acting I think he's
Yeah.
delivered in anything that he's done previously. But he doesn't come on set with an entourage. He comes with one guy who
Yeah.
is his friend for 25 years. There's
Nice.
no hierarchy, there's no
Yeah,
bravado. He's
no
just
big
a
ego.
regular actor
Yeah.
on set. No, not at all. And he knows it's essentially my show. He doesn't step on that at all. He's very, very giving and warm and humble. He's got nothing to prove.
Yeah.
He's already made his
Yeah.
name. He's already famous, and if were it not for him, none of us would be there. So he doesn't have that. He doesn't have anything to prove, and he's extremely humble. When he comes on set as a producer, sometimes we see 50 Cent, and he is extremely charismatic and he's extremely charming, and all the other things. But I got to know, and the person that I speak to every now and then, and is Curtis
Yeah,
Jackson. He's
lovely.
an amazing, amazing man. I've got a lot of time and a lot of respect for him.
Oh, now I guess being a legal drama, so looking at past dramas, I mean even the old school LA Law and The Good Wife, Suits, legal dramas have legs because of course every episode you can get a new interesting story that can take you wherever. Are there plans for another series? Not
Well, let me correct
well.
one thing. This is what everyone thinks until they
Except
get
I'm
to
only
episode
right.
five.
Oh, well, I'm on episode 4.
So this isn't just a legal drama. It's a legal drama, it's a family drama, and it's a prison drama.
Yeah.
And where it's not procedural either, where you have exactly what you mentioned. Every week there's a different story, and you just keep going and going and going, and that's the same format every single week. This is not that. What's different to our drama on the legal side compared to most legal dramas is every case or most cases that Aaron is looking for to represent as prison rep through the prisoners that
Yeah.
he's representing are all cases that will help his case. So he's very
Right,
self-motivated.
yeah.
And
Yeah, he's got
by
an aim.
episode
He's, yeah.
five, he's got a clear vision as to what he wants to achieve. It's not just, I'm going to be the friendly, selfless lawyer and help all these people get off their
Yeah,
charges.
yeah.
No, he's actually being very, very selfish, and he will do, he's morally,
Smart.
he's conflicted, and he's not all, sunshine and flowers either, because he's got an agenda, and that agenda is to get himself off of his get himself to trial to exonerate
Yeah.
himself. But what happens after episode five is we see the drama shift and morph into something that's not procedural. And so following the life of Isaac Wright, Isaac does actually get out of jail. So at some point throughout the seasons, depending on how many we're gifted in being able to deliver, he will get out of jail, and then there will be another story that ties him to prison, because he's then a lawyer out in the world. Yeah. Because after Isaac got out, there's a whole lot of other things.
Well, actually, you mentioned sort of early on that it was another sort of, I don't know, 7 years before he was allowed to practice law.
Yes, it was, and that's where Aaron's, the character that I play, that's where Aaron's story is different to Isaac's. Aaron is actually a practicing lawyer, in prison, who has taken the bar and is, you know, and can represent people. Isaac wasn't until he got out of jail. So we've kind of, you know, we've bent the truth again, only being inspired by Isaac's story. We were able to, you know, do certain things for dramatic purposes. But we still have an idea for a storyline once he leaves jail.
Brilliant.
Whenever that may be.
Now, people are always surprised by how long a film or a series is shot. You know, they're watching a 45-minute hour episode and they imagine that it takes, you know, the actor a day to shoot. Which, of course, is very different to reality. Now, I've seen you mention that with this, For Life, you would take, what, 8 days for an episode? How does that differ for Marcella, something like here and Marcella? Is it a similar sort of time frame, or are they very different?
Well, the main difference of working here and in America is, you know, the days and the amount of crew on set. 8 days to do an episode is ridiculously quick. Especially a drama of that magnitude, because it's essentially three dramas. You've got three plot lines. You've got the prison drama, the legal drama, and the family drama. And there's a lot of content, a lot of actors, and to cram all of that in 8 days is a lot. It's a drama. It's not just a sitcom. It's not half hour. It's, you know, meant to be slot between, you know, an hour. So it runs at about 46 minutes with five ad breaks. In the UK, a drama of that magnitude, you would have anywhere between the minimum being 11 days and the maximum being about 15 for one episode. And so the turnover rate is so high. And it was, again, it's the first time I've done that. I'd never done that before. So it was absolutely new territory for me. And the crew size in America is, you know, you've got up to 70, maybe 80 crew members on set at any one time.
Wow.
In the UK, you've got half that, if not less.
Now, Nicholas, looking at Black Lives Matter, the movement happening now, For Life couldn't have been timed better. It's strong, solid story, and one that you'd hope everyone now understands and really kind of gets behind. Again, I recall you in your younger days turning down roles that were negative Black roles, and you were a struggling actor then, so that took some guts, Nicholas. And I remember being really proud of you for standing by your principles and saying, no, I'm not doing it. Are you quite aware of kind of being, I don't know, a bit of a role model, or have a sense of responsibility?
I don't see it that way. I was just basically doing what I felt was right for me, and hoping that it would permeate to being right for other people. Because, so I was always the type of actor that said no to roles that I didn't want, because acting is the thing I love probably the most in the world. Don't tell my sister that. You know, it means a lot to me. So my thing was, I would always only ever do things that I really wanted to do. After, you know, my apprenticeship years, when I first went out there as an adult actor after being a child actor for so many years, you know, I kind of did, you know, The Bill and EastEnders and Doctors and Holby City and Casualty, just to, you know, get my feet, get some things on my CV, and then pretty quickly I was very much okay, no, I don't want to do that anymore, because if you're gonna make me a drug dealer, make it a drug dealer that's got three dimensions to it and is in more than one episode. And I was very clear about what I wanted my career path to be. But you have to go back and remember that I knew what I wanted to do from the age of four.
Yeah,
and so nothing was really going to steer me off my path. So I was very clear as to what I wanted and how I was going to get it. And so, you know, I found myself in a bit of a wilderness, what I call my wilderness years, where I wasn't really working much. And so I suffered a mental breakdown 14 years ago. And that led me into therapy, which then led me not to work as much, which then led me to credit card debts and working in a hotel and negating all my mortgage for 3 months. So I was £30,000 in debt. I had someone living in my spare room. I was working at a hotel doing 8-hour shifts, sometimes 16-hour shifts with a half hour break at £5.80 an hour. I was also working two jobs as a acting and dialect coach at two colleges, performing arts colleges outside of London. I was 3 months behind in my mortgage payments, and wow. I was just about making the minimum payments for my credit card bills. But I was still saying no, because I knew, well, I knew what I wanted my career path to be.
Yeah.
And I wasn't going to steer from that path, because up and, you know, it's always worked for me. So I had a plan A, I didn't have a plan B.
Yeah.
And whenever plan A wasn't working, I just retweaked plan A and kept it at plan A and didn't have a plan B.
Yeah, I have heard it said before, for performers, don't have a plan B, because otherwise you will fall onto plan B.
Right. So do you remember at school when we were doing our GCSEs? There was a teacher, the history teacher, and I can't remember who it was.
Mr. Cohen,
right. So it's Mr. Cohen, or is it the maths teacher, Mr. Ronan?
Mr. Ronan, yeah.
Right, so it's Mr. Ronan, and he basically, I remember he said something very, very poignant that always stuck with me. He said, this industry is really, really difficult. Most of you in this room are not going to make it. So I'm going to make sure to give you a start in life so you have something to fall back on. Basically, he was allowing us to cheat. It was like someone took a baseball bat and hit me in the head, and I thought, hold on, if I have something to fall back on, I'm probably going to end up falling back on it.
Yeah.
And at that point, I decided to deliberately fail my GCSEs. So I left
Stop
school.
It.
Yeah, I left school with no qualifications on paper that could get me a job, deliberately. And then I followed you and four other students that we were at school with to dance college, because I didn't know what else I was going to do. Yeah, I didn't know what else we were going to do. And it was you that actually said, why don't you come to Studio Centre? And I went, yeah, okay, that's what I'm going to
do. Also at that time, Nicholas, we were 16 when we went there. And
right.
Even at that time, there weren't many colleges that took you on at 16. You had to be 18.
A
Studio Centre
was
one
was
of the
15
few.
Days a 16-year-old.
Yeah.
I was the youngest boy. At the time, I was the youngest ever boy that had attended that school. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It is
mad. And so I basically gave myself no option but to make it work. So when I got to a point where I was on my feet, where I was, you know, flat on my ass and, you know, not being able to stand on my feet, I had to keep saying no, because, you know, a lot of soap operas were offering me contracts and offering me auditions. And I just kept saying nope. And then a script landed on my door. I kept reading, and I read it, and they wanted me for one role, but then there was this other role that just kept speaking to me. I kept reading it, and this other role just kept coming at me and, you know, going, actually, I really want to play that role. So I spoke to my agent, and I said to them, look, can you speak to the casting director and ask them if I can go up for this role? And they said, well, we've spoken to the casting director, we've asked them if you can go up for the role. It's reserved for a big TV actor, so no, but you can audition for it anyway. So I said, okay, I'll audition for this other one, and I'll audition for that one, because it was a good script and I wanted to be a part of the story. And the role that they offered me wasn't bad. It just wasn't as good as this other one.
Yeah.
It didn't speak to me. Got to the audition. The casting director said to me, so you didn't like the role that we put you up for? And I said, well, it's not that. He says, I just think I'm better suited for this other role. He said, okay, yeah, you ready to cast? I said, yeah, okay, which one do you want me to do first? He said, forget the one that we put you up for. Do the one you want to do. Let me see what you got. And I got the job that day, and that was Top Boy, and that turned everything around.
How
Everything.
brilliant. Wow, so seeing Top Boy, you weren't up for that role. How?
No. So
Isn't
here's the
that
thing.
brilliant?
Had I not stuck to my plan and known my own mind, I probably wouldn't be talking to you under
Yeah.
these circumstances right now.
That's it. It just takes one role or great. Even I remember you telling me once it could be you could do a terrific job in something that is an epic fail and no one's gonna want you, even though your part in it may be really good. And the other way around, you could be absolutely rubbish, but it's in something that's really good. But it just so happens, you were both. But that's it. Top Boy was a massive success, and I suppose opened up,
Oh,
doors.
it was another defining moment in my career because because it became a hit and it was so well received and so widely. People, casting directors that had known me from being a kid, because they hadn't seen me on TV for a while, I just thought I'd given up acting. Because I just kept saying no. I just kept saying no.
Amazing. Now, you mentioned about sort of having a mental breakdown. You're an ambassador now for mental health charity Mind UK. You've been very open about mental health and your own suffering. Now, you gave a wonderful talk on your social media about mental health and lockdown, about people being forced to spend time with themselves and the difficulties that may bring up. Just tell us a bit about that. I mean, and how, you're finding it, friends finding it. I thought it was a really sort of interesting piece.
Yeah, well, I had a lot of conversations with friends and family who were struggling because they weren't seeing friends, they weren't seeing other family members, and they were missing going out and going to restaurants, and their life has changed and all this sorts of stuff. And what became clear to me were people who had relied on the distractions of life, be it work, play, and anything else, to stop them from listening to their inner voice and being uncomfortable with just sitting with self. And that just kept coming up in people's stories. It just kept coming up, kept coming up. And that's why I spoke about it in that post, because it just became very clear to me. Had I not done the work that I had to have done in psychotherapy for 2.5 years when I had my breakdown, and then taking an extra 4 years after that to work out how to use the tools that I learned in therapy to manage my life, and then a further 4 years after that to actually put it into practice,
Yeah, it's a long
I probably
process.
would have been feeling the same thing. So when lockdown came and work stopped, going out stopped, going to the theatre stopped, going to cinema, seeing my friends, going to restaurants, seeing family members, and we were just stuck in the house, I was actually really okay because I was, used to a pattern of sitting with myself and analyzing what was going on and how do I really feel? What is this uncomfortable feeling? And I would always investigate what that was about. So for me, it was, an absolute win-win. I managed to get some time after my grueling schedule of filming to just sit with
Back.
myself and, be okay with the uncomfortableness of it, because I'm never in one place for very long. I travel a lot, and I'm always out and I'm doing things and I'm always working, I'm always busy, 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 busy.
And physical well-being is also,
Oh, totally.
key.
They work hand in hand.
And how are you dealing with that? Are you obviously there's no gym. Do you do outdoor training? Have you started anything new? I've started yoga. I'm loving
I
that.
started yoga and
You.
Pilates, yeah. Yeah, I did. I
It's
started
good,
yoga and
isn't it?
Pilates, started stretching again, and it was fantastic because I gave up going to the gym about 2 years ago and
So
just
how do
started
you keep?
working on,
Because you look amazing.
thank you, body weight. Just push-ups, pull-ups, sit-ups, squats, just nothing heavier than my own body weight. And my body responded to it better than going to the gym ever did. And it took me a long time to get there. I think when I was younger, going to the gym was beneficial for me. But as I'd gotten older and gotten to a plateau of strength, my body wasn't reacting to the exercises as well. So when I gave up going to the gym, what happened was something that was twofold and far better for me personally, was my body reacted better. And I got in touch with the body-mind connection a lot stronger because I was basically just connected to my body and not externally pushing heavier weights.
Well,
It was
same. I'm
literally just
finding that
me
with,
dealing with me.
yeah, I'm finding that with yoga. And I was like, wow, this should run. And I think a lot of colleges do now, hand in hand with dance, because it does connect. I don't know. When you
It really
dance,
does.
it's kind of just about dancing, and you feel the music, and you sort of throw yourself in these positions.
Yeah.
And then yoga, it's more reflective, and the focus and the breathing. I'm like, wow,
Yeah.
I'm hooked, I have to say. And not many people know this, but you were quite a dancer. You trained. We trained together.
We
Have
did
you
train
ever
together. I
done? I
was
mean,
a
last time I saw
dancer.
you dance, you might have been 20 years old, which is quite some time ago. Nicholas Pinnick. Have you ever danced? Again, like in the last sort of
So I was
year
with a
or
contemporary dance company and I left them about 25 years ago, the Fanshawes. I left them 25 years ago. And as a model, in my younger days as well, and I would dance on the circuit and things like that, and that was fine. But then I gave up when I was 30. That last weekend,
So say last weekend you were 30. I don't think so.
Actually, I wouldn't want to go back to being 30. But last weekend, I recorded a dance performance that I had done 25 years ago with the Fanshawes for a quarantine Elvis Legs remix for Lee Anderson. There's nine of us. I'm the only original cast member that took part in it. And
Brilliant.
so I was rehearsing during lockdown for about 2 weeks, this one section of a show that we had done 25 years, we had
Oh,
created 25
excellent.
years ago. And that's going to be out there because, and this is the inception and the first part of a bigger thing. So in 2023, when I turn 50, I'll be doing my last professional dance performance. One in London, one in Havana, and one in New York. This is what's planned. Yeah,
That
this is what's
sounds
planned.
amazing.
So this is the first part. Next year we're going to do something else. I'm building up to being a professional dancer again, as
The
well as
age of
being an
50.
actor in Hollywood, you know.
Oh, that's amazing. Well, do you know what? Thank you so much for coming on the show. It's
Oh, it's an
been
absolute pleasure. Great
absolute
talking to
pleasure.
you.
Thank you,
Thanks for having me
Nicholas.
on.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.